In this chapter 15, Krishna wanted to describe to us the relationship of the jiva with this world. So all the Upanishads are telling us about three components that we must understand. One is the jiva, the individual. Second is the world. And third is God or Brahman. Thus, to describe the world, he gave an allegorical example of the tree, the banyan tree. The tree represents the world. The branches of the tree represent? What do the branches of the tree represent?
Jiva.
What do the branches represent? Branches represent the different lokas, remember? Some are high, some are low. There are 14 lokas. And the reason we the jivas are attached to this world, Krishna explained, like the roots of the trees, the secondary roots, they bind the tree to the ground. So we are also strongly attached to the world because of our past, our wrong actions. Wrong knowledge leading to wrong actions keep us continuously bound in this world. Thus he said in the earlier verses of chapter 15, we should use a strong acts of detachment. So the first sadhana he gave us was detachment. Practice detachment. Then when we detach from the world, what must we do? We must turn our mind towards God. So the second sadhana was what we call building up this devotion towards God. As we detach is vairagya, then the mind must attach to God. And then he gave us some other sadhanas which we went through to follow. How we should slowly detach ourselves from this world and attach our mind to God. And then he brought us to verse number 6, after telling us about the four sadhanas. In verse number 6, he told us the goal that we have to reach. So that goal, Krishna said, if you look at verse 6, Tat dhama paramam mama, that goal, that final destinations, Krishna says, the highest goal for every spiritual aspirant to reach is my home. Now, the question is, what is preventing us from going there? So, let us first look at the condition of our mind. Because everything begins and ends with the mind. The whole Bhagavad Gita is nothing but being a master of your mind. So what is it? Mind is generally afflicted by three conditions. The first is called shoka. Shoka means sorrow, grief, right? The second is called bhayam or fear. And the third is called moha or delusion. So when we say shoka, sorrow, it is generally about what? What is sorrow about normally? What do we grieve over? What do we cry over? Which is always in the
past.
So sorrow is generally connected to what happened in the past. Our regrets and our crying is generally about the dead past. When we talk about bhayam, fear, it is generally about what? The future. Right? The unknown future, the uncertain future. And generally we find our mind is either in the past or in the future, either in shoka or either in vairagya. But there is a third factor that afflicts our mind, and that is called moha. Moha is in the present. Our state of delusion is in the present. Now, what is moha? What is our delusion caused by? The scriptures say our delusion is at two levels. At the very basic level, our present delusion is between dharma and adharma. Dharma, adharma, aviveka. Viveka means to have, viveka is what?
Discrimination.
Aviveka means we are confused. Confused about what? What is the right path? What is the wrong path? Many times we come to this question, should I do this, should I do that? Is this the right thing? Is that the right thing? What is the right thing in my life? Right? Confusion about dharma and adharma. And at the higher level, the highest level, our confusion is, the scriptures say, Atma, Anatma, Viveka. Atma, the real self, the consciousness, versus Anatma, the body, mind, complex or matter. We do not know, or we do not, we are confused as to our identity. Now, if we look at Arjuna's problem, coming back to Arjuna's problem, what was the title of the first chapter? Arjuna Vishada Yoga, despondency of Arjuna. His despondency was caused by these two factors. Shoka about all his relatives and bhayam, fear of the future. How is he going to kill them? What is going to be the outcome of the war? And Shoka, he was crying over the past that he has so much of love and affection for these relatives. So his depression or delusion or what we call despondency was caused by Shoka and bhayam, fear of sorrow of the past and fear of the future. But if we look at, after that Krishna gave him his whole Bhagavad Gita dialogue, and after giving him all the teachings of the Bhagavad Gita, in chapter 18, if we look at verse number 72, page 335, after giving him all the teachings to lift Arjuna out of his state of despondency, Krishna only asked him one question. What is that? Has your delusion been dispelled? He didn't ask him about Shoka. He didn't ask him about Thayam. He asked him what? Has your Moha been dispelled? He says, Sam moha pranashtas. Pranashtas means destroy. What destroy? Sam moha. Now why is that he's only worried? He's only asking about moha. He's not concerned about Arjuna's shoka. He's not concerned about Arjuna's bhayam. Why he only asks him one question? Has your moha been destroyed? He only wants to know whether his delusion has been destroyed. Himself means what? So, once delusion has been destroyed, once you know that your nature is of consciousness, weakness, consciousness, I am not the body, I am the supreme consciousness, where is that cause of shoka? When you are crying about the past, you are crying about your body, your relationships, your possessions, all those belong to what? Body or consciousness? Body. When you are fearful of the future, again your relationships, your health of your body or whatever it is connected to what? Everything is connected to body and not the consciousness. So when this moha, this delusion is removed, that I am the consciousness and I am not this body, the Upanishads say, where is there cause for sorrow? Where is there cause for fear? So therefore, the foundation or the very cause of our sorrow and fear is nothing but moha. That's why Krishna only asked Arjuna this one question: has your moha been destroyed? And once that has been destroyed, you know very well how to think, how to act, and in which direction to go. So this is the most important thing for us to understand: how to reach. And once the moha has been destroyed, once we accepted our higher identity, that is what Krishna says here: that is my dharma, that is my home. That means you and God become one. You become the very nature of God, which is what? Sat Chit Ananda. You become the very nature. Once you become the nature of Sat Chit Ananda, it means you and God are one, because that is the nature of God. So now he told us that where is that place? That place he described in verse number 6, and we discussed this last week when he said that is a place where the sun cannot reach, where the rays of the sun cannot reach. Na bhashayate suryo, the suryo, the sun cannot reach. Na shashanko, neither can the rays of the moon also illumine. Na pavaka, neither can the fire also illumine. And of course, if we take the very direct meaning, it means the effulgence, the Lord has got that much of effulgence that whatever other effulgence can never ever compare to that supreme effulgence. So it is not that God is a place where it is totally dark, where there is no sun, there is no moon, there is no fire, but that place, if we reach that place, where is that place? Not somewhere far away. By our understanding, if we understand we are Sachit Ananda, we will experience that effulgence that is beyond the effulgence of the sun, beyond the effulgence of the moon, beyond the effulgence of the fire also. So that is what he is trying to explain. That is his nature, which is effulgence. Now, another way to look at the verse also is that what do these three things, sun, moon and fire, represent? So there is another allegorical meaning also to this verse. So sun is the giver of light, Aditya. Normally sun is associated with Aditya, the sun god, Aditya. And normally when we say illumine, the sun is associated with illumination, it refers to our senses. Our eyes, our nose, our ears, these are illumine. So this is what the sun or Aditya normally is associated with: our senses, our sense of sight, smell, taste, touch, sound, etc. And what is the moon associated with? Mind. Moon is associated with the mind. What about fire? Sun is associated with senses, moon is associated with mind, fire is associated with. Have you heard the expression fire of speech? Fiery speech. Right? So fire is normally associated with our speech. So Vak Devata, the Devata for speech, is called Vak, V-A-K, Vak Devata, which is associated with fire. So what he's trying to say is that when he says, my abode is beyond the sun, beyond the moon, beyond the fire, it means to say, his highest state, the highest nature of God, which is what? Brahman, which has no attributes. When we say no attributes, means what? Your senses cannot experience. Therefore, your sun, meaning your senses, which the sun which illumines all your senses can never ever experience God. Because the highest nature of God has got no attributes, no sound, no taste, no form, no color, nothing at all. And he says, not only can your senses not experience, even your mind cannot even conceive Because if your senses cannot experience, how can your mind even think of something? I can only think of something which I can experience. Then my mind can conceive it. But Brahman is beyond your senses. It cannot be conceived by your mind. And therefore, how can your speech even describe what is Brahman? So all your three equipments, your senses, your mind and your speech cannot reach there. Cannot reach there means cannot comprehend what is this Brahman. Therefore, what can only help you? What? Knowledge which can be used only attained through the intellect. So the only organ that can help you first to understand what is Brahman is your intellect. So first by your intellect, gain knowledge of what is Brahman, that is through Shravanam and Mananam, and then through meditation, Nididhyasanam, you will get to experience the state of Satchit Ananda. So he is beyond your senses, he is beyond your mind, he is beyond your powers of speech. That's why the Guru also can only give you the directions. What is Brahman roughly he can tell you. But you have to hear it, you have to reflect upon it, and then you have to experience it. So the final stage of experience can only be done by you. Nobody can help you for that. So Krishna says, that is my abode. And what does he say about that abode? He says, tad gatva. Tad means that state. Gatva means to reach. When you reach such a state, not that you have to travel somewhere, but when you understand your real nature, such a stage can be reached after a certain period of time, and it does not require us to go and travel to Vaikuntha or Kailasa, etc. And even if you travel to heaven, you are not going to find God, because God is not in the heaven. God is beyond the seven, the Swarga Lokas also. So there is not a place to travel, but Brahman can only be attained through the path of knowledge. So moha is caused by our delusion of our highest nature, is caused by what? Ignorance. For ignorance there is only one remedy, which is knowledge. So knowledge is your ultimate remedy to remove this ignorance. And what happens when you understand aham, atma, asmi? When you reach that state, when you see all the transactions of your life from that state, such a person, Krishna says here in the third line, na nivartante, does not return. Now, when we say does not return, here that person is still living. He is not dead yet. So when you say while living you don't return to the state, means what? Not that you have died and gone. See, moksha must be first attained while living. If promise of moksha is only upon death, many people won't be interested, because how do I know that state? After I die, I don't know what's going to happen. I want to attain that state of jivan mukta while living. So here he says that state is attained where you don't return, means you don't go back to your old ways of living, your old ways of thinking, your old ways of handling situations in life. Now you understand your transactions in life from a different level. So na nivartante, you do not go back to the old ways of living. Just like they say, an illiterate person, once he becomes a literate, cannot become an illiterate. Right? Once you've studied the entire, alphabets, you studied grammar, this, that, everything, you cannot become a illiterate. So once you attain that situation, once you attain that knowledge and accept Aham Brahma Asmi, you cannot go back to your old way of living and thinking. And that Krishna says, that Dharma, that state is my higher state. You become one with the Supreme Being. So that is what he explained in verse number 6. Now, in verse number 7 up to verse number 11, Krishna wants to further describe about where is this Brahman, to give us a more practical understanding of where God exists. So he is going to now explain further about this Brahman. Now we have to understand this, that what is actually Brahman when he appears in this world as Jiva. What actually is a Jiva? So here the explanation of the Jiva is very beautifully given in verse number 7. What do you mean by Jiva? And that's why we must understand the difference between Jiva and Atman. So there's Jiva, there's Atman, there's Brahman. What is Jiva, we have to understand. Now, Jiva is basically the what we call the reflected consciousness. Reflected consciousness. And where is this consciousness reflected? Brahman is the original consciousness. Jiva is the reflected consciousness. Where is the consciousness reflected in? In our bodies. Where does this reflected consciousness occur? In the mind. The Jiva, the Brahman reflects the consciousness in the mind. So the mind then comes alive. Because mind is made of matter. Mind has got no life of its own. So when Brahman reflects on mind, the mind comes alive. So therefore, how many Jivas are there? How many Jivas are there? 1, 2, 3. How many Jivas are there? 1. How many minds are there? How many minds are there in this room? Many, right? How many minds are there in this whole world? Millions. Therefore, how many Jivas are there? Millions of Jivas. But how many suns are there? Only one sun. How many reflections are there? Many. If there are millions of mirrors, there will be millions of reflected suns. But the original sun is only one. Now, this reflected consciousness is also given another name. You will find if you read the Upanishads and all, the name is called Chidabhasa. C-H-I-D-A-B-H-A-S-A. Chidabhasa. Which means reflected consciousness. Because the mind is actually sentient. It has got no life. When the consciousness reflects in the mind becomes alive. This is called Chidabhasa. Now what happens when the mind comes alive? The mind receives the consciousness, it becomes alive. What happens when the mind comes alive? It in turn enlivens the body, it enlivens the senses. Just like when you boil a pot of water and you have the flame on the pot will heat up the pot. And you put vegetables in the water, the vegetables do not directly get the fire, but the vegetables get boiled. How? Because the fire transmits to the pot heats up the water heats up the vegetables. In the same way, the mind which is in the body receives the life, the consciousness, the mind in turn enlivens the body, it enlivens the senses. That's why when the Jiva leaves also, it leaves also the same way. First the body goes, the body becomes still. Then the Jiva retreats to the mind and finally it leaves from the mind. The very subtle mind. Okay. So this is what the verse wants us to understand, that where is this consciousness? It is right there in our body. It is there in our body. This supreme consciousness exists in our body. So what does Krishna say here? He says, now look at the first line. Mama, now, Again, when we read Sanskrit, all these words are jumbled up. You got to break up the words. So if you look at the first line, Mama Eva Amsa Jiva Loke. Mama Eva Amsa Jiva Loke. Okay? Now, let's leave all the words aside. Let's first look at the word Amsa in the very first line of verse 7. Okay, you will find some difficulty, but if you look at the words there, A-M-S-O, okay, Amsa. Amsa means a fraction, a part. So what Krishna is saying, this jiva is a fraction of what? Mama eva, of me, myself. Now we must be very careful. Again, go back to that example of the sun and the mirror. This is very important, that we don't think that when God says the jiva is a part of myself, means what? It's not that God is broken into millions of parts. But what does it mean basically is that, same example, that this is the sun and this is one mirror, this is two mirror and many, many, many mirrors, and you have the reflected sun here. This is reflected consciousness, reflected consciousness, reflected consciousness. This is original consciousness. What is this? Jiva, 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 and many, 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 many jivas. This is Brahman, and also the name given also is Atman. Now you must know that since Brahman is all pervading, it is also here also. When Brahman is also all pervading, it is inside the body and outside the body. So the original consciousness is also in the body, right? And the jiva, which is the reflected consciousness, is also in the body. Do you remember the example of the two birds? I gave you the story. Do you recall the story? Did I explain it? Right? So, who is the lower bird? The lower bird is the jiva and the higher bird is the Atman. Both are in the same body. Atman is the consciousness and jiva is the reflected consciousness. Okay? So, keep this in mind. So, now he says, this answer, the jiva, is a fraction of myself. Fraction does not mean that God is broken into many pieces, is a reflection of myself. Where is it? Look at the second line, the word jiva bhuta. It has become a jiva. This reflection of mine, this answer, the fraction of myself, has become a jiva. Means now it has taken a reflection in the world. Okay, jiva bhuta. Just like the sun is reflected in water, reflected in mirrors, etc. So, when Krishna says, my portion, eternal portion, it does not mean that is Krishna body. That's why a lot of people, sometimes they think that when Krishna says me, 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 means Krishna body. It does not mean Krishna has broken his body into various pieces. It means the supreme consciousness is now reflected in the world. Okay. Now, therefore, what he is saying, I appear in this world as reflected consciousness. Okay, where am I? He says, jiva loka, in this world of jivas. Now, where are all the jivas? Where are all the jivas? They are in all the 14 lokas. They are in the asura loka, and in the patal loka, they are in the world. In this Bhuloka, they are in the Swarga Loka. In all the 14 lokas, Krishna says, my reflection is there in the form of jivas. Because we as jivas can go to the lower lokas, we can go to the higher lokas, we can be in the world. We can also be animals, insects, rocks, plants, all those are jivas. Because the reflected consciousness is everywhere. So jivas, we must not only think of human form, animal form, plant form, insect form, devas, asuras, everywhere God's reflection is there. Okay? Jiva loke. And what is the description of these jivas? Krishna says, Sanatana. So you see the word Jiva Bhuta Sanatana. My reflection is in the Jivas and it is Sanatana, it is eternal. That means my reflection is eternal. Now, why is it eternal? Because right now, when the whole creation exists, right, all the 14 lokas exist, God's reflection is in all the various jivas. Now, what happens when the whole creation ceases to exist? When the whole creation goes into Mahapralaya, what happens? What happens then? When there's total destruction, what happens to all the 14 lokas, all the jivas in the 14 lokas? No, they don't go back to Brahman. They go back into seed form. So all the minds of all the jivas, they are not destroyed, they go back into seed form. And therefore God's reflection is still there. So the mind, the subtle mind, we will discuss that soon, the subtle mind and the causal mind is not destroyed. Everything goes back into seed form. Why is not destroyed? Because the karmas are still there. You still have to come back. So after Mahapralaya, everything goes back into seed form. The reflection is still there. When there is Mahashrishti, when the whole world is woken up again for the next cycle, all these jivas now take manifestation in the 14 lokas. Therefore he says, my jivas are also eternal because they actually never die. Everything goes from manifest to unmanifest, back to manifest and unmanifest. The whole cycle goes on. Therefore the jivas are also eternal. God is eternal, the reflection also is eternal. So, Jiva Bhuta Sanatana. And what else now? Now what happens now? So this jiva is saying is in us, is in everybody. It's in you, it's in me, the reflected consciousness is there and it is eternal. Now, because of the papam and punyam, we have to keep coming back. Now, where is this jiva now, he says? Prakritishthani. It is seated in Prakriti. Prakriti means basically it is encased by the body. So whether it is a human body, whether it is a rock body, asura body, this jiva now is encased in the body. And this verse is connected to the next verse. And what happens when it is encased in the body, when it is enclosed, the reflection comes, it is enclosed. When it is enclosed in the body, what does the jiva do? He says, manashastani indriyani karshati. It attracts, it pulls. When the jiva resides in a new body, it pulls with it from the past body. What does it pull? Pulls the subtle body and the causal body. Indriyas, I will explain, indriyas are senses. But senses does not mean your gross senses. Why not your gross senses? Here indriyas are senses, but here it does not mean your gross. It does not mean it takes your eyes, your nose, everything and pulls to the new body. Why? The whole body cremated already, right? So where is it going to take the eyes and the nose and all that? So what it means is that the subtle senses, the power that gives your eyes the power to see, the power that gives your ear the power to hear, that is what he is talking about, indriyas. It takes the subtle senses, it pulls the subtle senses from the old body, it pulls the mind from the old body, the subtle mind, not your brain, and it sits in the new body. Now again, we go back to that example of this mirror and the reflection and the sun. So here we have a frame. This is the frame. This is the mirror. and this is the jiva. Now, at the point of death, what happens to the body? We cremated. So, what happens to the frame? No more frame. Okay? Frame is gone. Okay? Now, what happens to the mirror? What does the mirror represent? The mirror represents, so again we come back to the three bodies that we have. Gross body, subtle body, and the causal body. Right? Causal body is the karana sharira. The subtle body is the sukshma sharira. And the gross body is the stula sharira. So the stula sharira is cremated, is gone. The mirror represents the subtle and the causal body. So now, when the frame is gone, the jiva now travels to a new frame. This is a new frame, the jiva is here. What does it do? It pulls the mirror and deposits also into the new frame. So kaakshati means it pulls. That when the jiva, the next verse is going to explain, when the jiva leaves the body, it pulls with it your subtle body, your sukshma sharira and your karana sharira. Sukshma sharira contains your mind, your intellect, your senses, senses again meaning the power to your senses, and mana, what is it? Mana, ahamkar, ego, mana, chitta, ahamkar, buddhi, mind, intellect, intellect and ego, okay? Chitta is a memory bank, and the causal body contains all your vasanas. So this is what it pulls along the new body. When the reflection is here in the frame, it pulls the mirror also and deposits it in the new frame. So therefore, the jiva is the presence of the Lord everywhere within us, in every body, in every creation. Okay? So this is the function of the jiva, which is basically a power of the Lord also, which is where? Here in this world. Okay? And when does the jiva decide to leave the body? What makes gives the decision to the jiva now it's time to go? Exhaustion of prarabdha karmas. When the prarabdha karmas are exhausted, that is the signal for the jiva, time for you to pack up and go. Okay? So that is what happens. Now, in the next verse, it is connected. So let's look at verse number 8. So he says, now, here, you notice in the second line now, he uses the word Ishvara. Now, Ishvara here means basically master of the body. Who is the master of the body? It is the jiva. Why is jiva the master of the body? Because the minute the jiva leaves the body, this body has got no more life. That's why the jiva is also called the Ishvara. It is the master of the body. Okay, what happens with this jiva now? He says, in the second line, Utkramati. Utkramati means when it leaves. When the jiva or the Ishvara, Utkramati, when it leaves, leaves what? Leaves the shariram. First line, you see the word shariram, that is body. Shariram is the gross body. So now the jiva has been given the signal, prarabdha karmas are over, you have to leave. So the reflective consciousness called the Ishvara now leaves the body becomes lifeless. And what happens? The word, also in the first line, avapnoti. Avapnoti means when it assumes a new body. So it leaves the old body and it assumes a new gross body. When it does that, what happens? It says, upon the point of departing, when it departs, samyati, it departs, and grithve means it takes. So the word samyati means when the jiva departs, grithve, it takes a new body. What does it do? It takes all these etani. The word etani here in the third line means basically the subtle mind, the subtle body, and the causal body. It takes this out from the gross body, it takes it along with it and deposits into the new body. This is the function of the jiva. Okay? So from the old body to the new body. So now you see the difference between jiva and atma. Where is atma? Where is atma? Does atma travel? No. Why does atma not travel? Because atma is all pervading. So who travels? Jiva travels. It is the jiva which is the traveling body. Okay? So don't say atma has left the body. You must be very clear. Because atma cannot travel, it is jiva who leaves the body. Okay? Now, what type of body does it take? When the jiva goes and travels, what type of body does it take? Depends on the sanchita karmas. Now the prarabdha karmas are burnt with this life. But the warehouse of karmas, the sanchit karmas exist. So depending on which sanchit karmas fructify, that jiva will go and find a suitable type of body. Depending what karmas you have to exhaust in your next life, whether you need an animal body, tiger body, cat body, human body, insect body, rock also, okay? Depending on your sanchit karmas, the jiva will take the appropriate body. And your subtle and causal body will be brought and deposited there, okay? So it's not necessary that you may take another human birth. You have to be very careful with all this. Okay. Now, so jiva is also called Ishvara because it is a part of the Supreme Lord. That's why it's given the name Ishvara. And it is also means it's a master of the body. Okay. Now, the next question is, you say jiva leaves the body. Why is it when jiva leaves the body, taking the other two parts of the body, why is it that I can't see? Because you say here, jiva leaves, it takes your senses, it takes your mind. Why is it I can't see this happening? Because it is subtle. Subtle means what? That which cannot be perceived by the senses. So you cannot see. Okay? So in order to, and therefore again, very important point here. When he says I am everywhere and everything, you must also understand that this reflected consciousness is also in rocks, also in trees. It is everywhere, moving and non-moving, right? And you should not now ask me the question why therefore the rocks and the trees are not moving, because I already explained this, right? I still see some eyebrows going up, some surprise, why the rocks and trees are not moving, okay? So we've already gone through that, okay? Now, so it is subtle, we can't see this leaving. Now, he gives an example. Beautiful example in the next two lines of verse number 8. He says how this whole thing happens. He gives a very practical example in nature. So he says, Eva means just like Vayu, the wind carries the Gandaha. Okay, Vayu Gandaha. Gandaha means fragrance. Okay. Fragrance from where? Asayat. So the last word in the fourth line, you see the word asayat. Asayat means the receptacles on the flower. You can either say flower or you can say the receptacles. Okay? So you have one vayu, the wind, carries the fragrance from the receptacles of the flower to another place. Okay? So three things he's given us. One is vayu, the wind. Second is gandaha, meaning the fragrance. Third is asayat, which means the receptacles of a flower. So where the fragrance? The fragrance is in the receptacles of the flower. Okay. The wind carries the fragrance to another place. Now, wind, can you see? No. Fragrance, can you see? You can smell, but you can't see fragrance, right? Right? You can smell, but you can't see. Receptacle, can you see?
Yes,
it is visible. So now you try to what you call match this with the three other components. What is he trying to tell us? What does the receptacle represent? What does the wind represent? What does the fragrance represent? See, three things he has given you to help you to understand that part about life and death also. So, wind, receptacles, fragrance. Two unseen, one seen. So, seen very easy. What is receptacle which is seen? What does that relate to? The gross body, right? So, the gross body. What does the fragrance reflect which is the unseen? Huh? The subtle and the causal body which we cannot see. And therefore, what does the wind represent which we cannot see also? The mind is the subtle body. Okay? So that is represented by the fragrance. So what does the wind represent?
Jiva.
The jiva. Just like the wind carries the fragrance from the receptacle to somewhere else, the jiva, which is the identified as the wind, carries the subtle body and the causal body, which is the fragrance, from the gross body, which is the flower. The receptacle, it carries the fragrance from the receptacle. So now you see the three things, right? How the wind carries the fragrance from the receptacles, same way the jiva carries the subtle and the causal body from the gross body. One is seen, two are not seen. So that's the example he gives. Okay? Now, therefore, what he has also explained to us, that the sentiency of the body, when the jiva leaves, that body which was alive, which was functioning, suddenly does not function. So where did this body get its sentiency? What he is saying in this verse is, the body has got its sentiency from the jiva. Now very careful, Atma is all pervading, Atma is still there. But the body is not moving. Why is that? Jiva is there, but Atma is still there. Why is the body not moving? Because Atma is also consciousness. Why is the body not moving? The Jiva is left, but Atma is there. You see, Atma is all pervading. Why is the body not moving? Huh? Sorry? The subtle and the causal body is no more there, so there is no way for the body to express itself. Right? The simple example I gave you all last time, the bulb is there, electricity is there, the fuse has blown. Right? So Atma is there, bulb represents a gross body, but the mind and the subtle body and the causal body has been removed, therefore the electricity cannot express through the bulb anymore. And that's why rocks cannot express, although jiva is there, because there is no form of expression. Okay. So the proof that the body has got its sentiency from jiva is the most important point we have to understand. That the body by itself, the mind by itself, cannot be alive without the presence of jiva. And where is jiva? Jiva is the spark of Brahman. So therefore, where is Brahman? He is in everybody. So this is what the verse 7 and 8 is trying to establish. So just like we cannot see jiva, in the same way we see the electric bulb, it is on, we can't see electricity, we have no proof that electricity exists, But we understand that the bulb cannot shine on its own. It is because of electricity it is shining. So how do we know? Because through our knowledge, through our understanding. We can't see electricity, but we know because of electricity the bulb is shining. We can't see jiva, but we know by the scriptures that because of jiva, the body, the mind has got sentience. Okay? Okay, so that is what he has explained in this very important verses 7 and 8. Okay? So what he is trying to say is basically, God alone appears in all the bodies as the jiva. Okay? Now, what does he say in verse number 9? He says, when the jiva occupies this body, what does it do? What is the function? Earlier it leaves the past body, it brings all the subtle and causal body into the new body. When it exists in the body, the word adhishtaya is used here, the third line. Adhishtaya means when it resides in this body, what does it do? The verse here says, upasevayate. Okay, upasevayate is the last line there, upasevate. Upasevate means this jiva enjoys. While it is in the body, it enjoys. What does it enjoy? Visayan. Visayan means sense objects. Now, what do you mean by sense objects? Sense objects means when our senses are interacting with the creation. So, sense object means the sound, touch, taste, smell, etc. are called sense objects. So, our senses are having various experiences throughout the day. Okay? Pleasure, pain in the mind, everything. Okay? Now, so what is the jiva doing? When it is there, it is enjoying. Now, the word enjoying must also be understood. Actually, it means it experiences. It is the experiencing factor. Because we have two components to experience anything. One is called the visible gross component. And one is called the subtle component. For example, the visible gross component is the ear by which you hear. Right? But if the subtle component that gives the power to your ear to hear is not there, what happens? Although you have the ear, you do not hear. Right? You understand? If your mind is somewhere else, your ear can be here, but you do not hear. That's why sometimes somebody passes you by, tells you hello, you don't respond. Because where you're thinking of something else. And then they say you're very arrogant fellow. I tell you hello, you never respond back. Why? Because you were not aware. Okay? So there are two components. So now here he's saying the jiva is the subtle power that is experiencing all the experiences of the body. Okay? It experiences, but it does not get affected. That is the important thing to remember. So here the word enjoy must be understood clearly. It experiences, because without the jiva you cannot experience anything, isn't it? The dead body cannot experience anything. You need the jiva to experience. So the jiva enlivens all your organs to experience sounds, sight, touch, smell, etc. Okay? It enjoys, it experiences. What? It gives a description here. Srotram. Srotram means what? Sound. So everything that you are hearing, the jiva is enlivening your ear to hear. Chakshuhu, it means form. Form means through your eyes. Sprashanam means touch through your skin. Rasanam is your taste through your tongue. And grahanam means smell through your nose. So all your five gross senses, while they are interacting, it is the jiva which is also experiencing. all these experiences. That is the function of the jiva. Okay? And that's why all the various, what you call the devatas also, are all allocated. Every organ in our body has got a devata. So, example, the five indriyas, srotram, for hearing, the devata is called Dhyayus, D-Y-A-U-S. That's called a Dhyayus devata. He is the one who enlivens your ears to hear. Okay? Chakshu is enlivened by Surya devata. Chakshu is the eye, is enlivened by the Surya devata. Sprasanam, the sense of touch, is enlivened by Vayu devata, that is the air, the wind. Okay? Rasanam, the sense of taste, is enlivened by Varuna devata, waters. Actually, Varuna is associated with waters, so taste is associated with Varuna devata. And Grahanam, the what we call the sense of smell, is enlivened by the twin, the Ashwini devatas. That's why you have two nostrils, Ashwini devatas. So every part of our senses is has a devata. The manas, as you all know, is the mind. Okay. So all these are enlivened by the devatas. Okay? So that is the function of the jiva in the body. It enlivens and it experiences. Any questions so far or any confusion? It's very heavy verses because we are in the knowledge part of the Gita right now. Right? So we have to really try to understand, because a lot of questions can be answered by this. What is jiva? What is atma? What happens when jiva leaves the body? And all these things are answered very beautifully. Now, therefore, what we have concluded so far, that in order to experience Brahman now, one very important point which has been told to us in these last two verses, if you want to experience Brahman, you don't have to travel anywhere. Because where is this Brahman? Here, doing what? What is it doing? It is enlivening your eyes to see, it is enlivening your ears to hear, it is enlivening your skin to touch. That's what he said in verse number 9. Krishna said, this jiva is a fraction of myself. In this body, it is enlivening all your senses. So if I, that means all of us are experiencing God right now. Right? I am speaking. The power to speak is coming from where? Jiva, which is a fraction of Brahman. You are hopefully hearing me. The power to hear comes from where? From jiva, which is a spark of Brahman. So, aren't you all experiencing that Brahman right now? Through your senses, you are experiencing. You are seeing, you are touching, you are smelling. All your senses, you are experiencing the jiva. You don't have to travel to experience God. He is right there within you, enlivening all your senses. Your mind, your intellect, everything is being enlivened by that. Okay? So, first point was made there. That this body is inert and the enlivening factor is that very power from God which is in us. And secondly, in order to experience this Brahman, we need to know knowledge of where is this Brahman. Now he has told us where is this Brahman. It enlivens all your senses of experience. Okay? So now, who are the people who can experience, who cannot experience? That he explains in verse number 10. Okay? So there is a person here identified as the Vimuda in the third line of this verse number 10. Vimuda is a deluded one. Okay, Vimuda. When we say deluded, it means that the person has an intellect. All human beings have the intellect. But the problem is, this Vimuda has not developed the power of the intellect through knowledge. Intellect can only be sharpened through knowledge. So such a person who has not dedicated himself to study the scriptures has not strengthened the powers of the intellect to understand, to discriminate. Such a person is called vimuda. Now what about this vimuda? Na anupashyanti. Na means it has not. So the word pashyanti first means physically to see. When we see is called pashyanti. When you add the word anu as the prefix to pashyanti, it means this seeing is not by physical seeing, but it is by intellectual understanding, it is by knowledge. So this anupashyanti means knowledge that has been attained through reading, through understanding, through shravanam, through mananam. That is what is called anupashyanti. But this vimuda, okay, vimuda, which means the one who is devoid of discrimination, does not understand, na anupashyanti, he lacks the power of discrimination. Now, when does this ignorant person lack the power of discrimination? He says, when the utkramantam, when the jiva leaves the body, okay, and when the jiva is titam, when it is living in the body, it occupies another body, and gunjanam, when it is living in a body, that means when it is living, when it is existing in another body, okay, and through all the modifications, the gunas, all the modifications. So why are we able to experience sorrow? Why are we able to experience happiness? Why are we able to experience? We experience through what? Through the mind. But why are we able to experience? Mind is inert, it has got no life. So why are you able to experience? Because of the jiva. So this ignorant person, while looking at people going through various experiences, while seeing dead and live people, still does not understand how such a person does not understand that it is actually the jiva which is enlivening. Why this person is dead? It is because jiva has left the body. Why is this person living? It is because jiva is in the body. Why are we able to see and hear? It is because jiva is enlivening the body. But a vimuda is one who does not understand. But yet he says there are another group of people. Another group of people who are what? The fourth line, you see the word jnana chakshu. Chakshu means eye. Jnana means wisdom. Who are endowed with the eye of wisdom. Now therefore when he says eye of wisdom, he cannot be referring to your physical eye. Because wisdom cannot be attained by the physical eye. So when he talks about the eye of wisdom, what is he talking about? Talking about the intellect. Through the intellect, through the organ of the intellect, these people, they are able to understand. Just like we look at how do I know if there is electricity in this room? How do I know? You say there is electricity. How do I know there is electricity in this room? Huh? Fan is working, right? Light is working, aircon is working, right? So I know, although I cannot see, but because the fan is working, because the light is illuminating, I know that the electricity is there. So jnana chakshu is the same. Through knowledge, I understand when I see living beings, when my eyes are experiencing, my ears are hearing, I can understand it is actually the what we call the jiva in me, which is enlivening everything. So only through wisdom, the eye of knowledge, can one understand. But until one does not apply this, you continue to remain a vimuda. And that is why once we understand this, we can do namaskar to another person. Why? Who are we bowing down to? We are bowing down to the jiva, or that consciousness which is a part of that Brahman in every being also. That's why we can do namaskar to a stone, you can do namaskar to a tree, you can do namaskar to anything, because the jiva exists everywhere also. Now this is the difference between an ignorant person and a wise person. Despite seeing living and dead beings, despite having all the senses which can experience, such a person still doesn't understand what is this Brahman, where is this God, goes around searching. And you all have heard the very famous story of that lady who was looking outside the house, right? You all have heard that story, right? So they say, why? Because she said, I lost the ring or something inside the house, but she's looking outside the house. Why? Because there's light outside, there's no light inside. So God is there everywhere, but we are searching for Him outside somewhere there. He's there. We are experiencing right now through our talking, seeing, listening, we are experiencing. So only a jnana chakshu can understand that with the eye of wisdom. And if we just take a simple example, supposing if the sun is reflecting in the mirror, okay, there is a sun and there's a reflection in the mirror, and the reflection in the mirror comes alive and says, I am the mirror. Has the reflected sun in the mirror got any properties of the mirror? So the reflected sun has got all the properties of the sun. But yet the sun which is reflected in the mirror says, I am the mirror. This is exactly our problem. We are of the nature of Sachit Ananda. But what we are saying? I am not so Ananda, because I am this body, I am this mind, I am not Ananda. But in nature, in reality, you are Sachit Ananda. So this is what the scriptures are saying. You have to wake up and understand who you are. The wrong identification is the cause of all our shoka and all the cause of the bhayam, which is caused by nothing but moha, our delusion. Okay. So that is the difference between these two type of people. Now in verse number 11, Krishna carries on to explain also about this two type of people also. And he distinguishes between these two type of people. One he calls as the yogina. Verse number 11, you see the first line, the word yogina. Yogina means those who are spiritually inclined. Okay, those who are on the spiritual path, who have a discriminating intellect, who have cultivated a discriminating intellect. And versus the third line, you see the word akritamano. See, akritamano means those who have got impurified minds, whose minds are filled with anger, greed, etc. Okay? So there are two types of people here. So what he says about the yogina, how have the yoginas come to understand the presence of God everywhere? He says, because these yoginas, yatantas, very important word here, these yoginas, how they come to attain this jnana chakshu, this eye of intelligence? Because he said, yatantas, they have been striving, they have been diligent, they have been consistent on the spiritual path. So they have not taken spirituality as a part-time hobby. They are very diligent on the spiritual path, constantly reading the scriptures, constantly questioning, constantly trying to attain knowledge. They are doing karma yoga, upasana yoga, jnana yoga. And that's why the Shankara explains what are the qualifications required for any spiritually inclined person. He calls it sadhana chatustayam. I think you all have heard about that, right? Fourfold qualifications. Every spiritual seeker must have these fourfold qualifications. The first one he talks about is vairagya. Vairagya, very important. Dispassion. Slowly trying to retreat, and from what? What do you retreat from? Dispassion means what? Dispassion for what? Sorry? Dispassion from wasteful pursuit of material and sensual pleasures. Understanding the more and more time I pursue all my sensual and material pleasures, I am not going to progress spiritually. So first of all, I withdraw from all these wasteful, sensual and material pleasures. Then my energy and my time is conserved. Then what do? Second, viveka. I use that for discrimination. I develop my intellect through study of the scriptures. Because once we withdraw, we have extra time. With that time, we develop to ours. We commit to our spiritual development. So vairagya must go hand in hand with viveka, discrimination. And then he gives a third one, which is called shakya sampati. Shakya sampati means sixfold disciplines. Okay. Now, what are the sixfold disciplines? Number one, it doesn't mean just because we are studying the scriptures and trying to be spiritual that we are going to succeed. We must have certain disciplines in our life. What are the disciplines? One is called dhammaha. Dhammaha means mastery of my senses. I must be very careful where I expose my senses also. Because as they say, the more you let loose your senses, you put more garbage into your mind. So very careful where I expose my eyes, my ears, etc. Mastery of the senses is called dhammaha, D-A-M-A-H, dhammaha. Second is on a higher level, samaha, or mastery of the mind. I must also be very careful and not waste my mind in unnecessary thoughts. Right? Again, as I told you, our mind is either in shoka, grieving of the past, or bhayam, fear of the future. So wasting my mind running in different directions, I must be a master of my mind also. The third is shraddha, or faith. Faith in what? What should you have faith in? Faith in scriptures. What else? Faith in guru. Faith in yourself. You forgot the most important. Faith in God. Faith in God, guru, scriptures, and yourself. Right. So this thing is very important. Shraddha, have faith. Have faith that the scriptures are correct. The scriptures are telling you the right thing. These are the words of God Himself. He wants you to improve yourself. He wants you to elevate yourself. So follow His advice in the scriptures. You can't go wrong. Shraddha. The next one is Uparama. Uparama means performance of all your duties. Do not neglect your duties and responsibilities also. Do all your duties and responsibilities. The next one is called Samadhana. Samadhana means single-pointed concentration. Cultivate the single-pointed concentration. I've sent one video today to Brother Kumara, this one, Swamiji, talking about how, why is it we can't concentrate? See, if you have some time, you can circulate it to the group. So it's a very short video, about 20 minutes. This Swamiji has given a very nice talk. Why is it we can't concentrate? So you should listen to that video. Single-pointed concentration. And then the next one is called Titiksha. Titiksha means, while we are on the spiritual path, we will meet many challenges. There will be many obstacles also in our lives. Right? I'm leaving for Gita class, 4:30. I want to go. Ting, the bell rings. Relatives have dropped in. What do I do now? You know? So, Titiksha, you have to also forbearance. You have to undergo all these challenges in life. There will be obstacles. So, Titiksha also is a very important quality. And then, so these are the six qualities that fall under Shakya Sampati, or the six disciplines. So, there was, one was Vairagya, Viveka, sixfold disciplines, and the fourth one is called Mumukshutva, which means desire for moksha. And the desire for moksha can also be at different levels. Everybody wants moksha. But what's the problem? You ask everybody, yes, we all want moksha. All fed up of life, we all want moksha. But what is the difference? Some people say, I can't do it in this life, I'll try next life. No, doesn't matter. No, there is reincarnation. So why so hurry? I want moksha, but moksha can wait. Even now, if God comes in front of you and says, I've got two options for you. One hand, I've got $5 million. I give you a bungalow with swimming pool. I give you Mercedes Benz. Another hand, I give you moksha. Which one do you want? I will take the $5 million. Generally, people are not interested. They'll say, why moksha can wait, let me enjoy this. Next life, let me see. So, moksha here, mumukshutva, means burning desire for moksha. Means I want to attain moksha in this life. There must be that. Whether you attain or not is another thing. But there must be that burning desire in you, mumukshutva. So, these are the things which fall under sadhana chatustayam, the fourfold sadhanas. So, these people, the yogina, yatantas, they diligently follow this path of spirituality. They don't take it as a part-time hobby. And what happens, he says, pashyanti enam. Pashyanti means they will come to perceive him. Enam means this one, means the consciousness within. They will come to realize this consciousness if they diligently follow this path. And where is this consciousness? Avashtitam, it is reflected where? Atmanam, in your own self. It is not outside there that you have to search for this God. It is there, reflected within your own body-mind complex. It is the very thing that is enlivening your body-mind complex. So this is what the diligent ones do. They follow dedicatedly the spiritual path and they will attain that moksha. And what about the other type of people? The akritamano, who are the ones with unpurified minds. So one of the qualities of such people is that achetasa. Achetasa means, in the last line you see the word achetasa. It means those who are devoid of discrimination. Their minds are totally devoid of discrimination. They are not interested in the scriptures. They are not interested in the spiritual life. Even if they pursue spirituality, it is for what purpose? Even if they do pursue spirituality, it is for what purpose? More money, more name, more fame, or to remove obstacles. They are not interested in attaining God. So these people, what does he say? Na pashyanti. They cannot understand this consciousness within. They will never come to understand. Because therefore what he is saying, if you don't put in the effort, if you don't strive, you will never attain the goal. So if you are serious about attaining this state of moksha, to discover this consciousness within, you have to put in effort, you have to strive. Right? If you want to progress and not just mechanically read the scriptures, mechanically do prayers, but have that burning desire for moksha, you will definitely achieve. So, we'll come back next week and discuss the next verses from 12 onwards, where Krishna will describe. Now, first of all, he told us he is here in this body. What is he doing? He is enlivening the senses. Now, the next few verses, he is also going to tell us, but I am not only in your body, I am also outside. Where am I? He is going to describe to us in the next few verses. And in that is the beautiful food prayer verse number 14. Okay, we will come back and understand that next week. Okay, we end with the prayer. Vasudeva sutam devam kansa chanura mardanam Devaki Paramanandam Krishnam Vande Jagat Guru. Thank you. Are you? Huh? Oh, next week is Chinese.
Show of hands.
Oh, can we have a show of hands now?
Show of hands for next week. And announcement, Gita Ashram is having their yoga classes.